Reading from the Narada Bhakti Sutras. Text 25. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Satu Karma Jnana Yogi Bhyo Adhikartara. True devotional service, on the other hand, is far superior to fruitive work, philosophical speculation, and mystic meditation. That's karma, jnana, and yoga. Purport, having described the gopis of Vraja as the topmost example of para-bhakti, Narada now turns his attention to bhakti in general. Here Narada asserts that all bhaktas are categorically superior to other Vedic practitioners. The classification of human beings into karmis, jnanis, yogis, and bhaktas is itself a brilliant gift of Vedic knowledge. Let us see why, out of the full range of possible activities, bhakti is the highest. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Baye Vicha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasude Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Greetings from Vrindavan. I'm now at the place that I usually stay. Many of you have visited here, except I'm in the downstairs apartment. It's just a very incredible, beautiful place. A cul-de-sac, about 5 minutes from the temple, so it's relatively peaceful and quiet. And I'm giving my classes and beginning my writing. I'm very, very happy here. Today I'll go out to Varsana. There's a beautiful place called Krishna Kund. I think of all the places in Vraja, that's the most sanctified, externally at least. It's just a very, very peaceful place. It's kind of a place where, you know, it's a little bit off the beaten path, and there's a little community of Vaishnavas that live there mainly as disciples of Ramesh Baba, who's a great saint of Vraja. Maybe you know him from the journey home. Radhanath Swami lived there with him. Radhanath Swami was only 20, he was 34 at the time. But he almost single-handedly is trying to save the environment of Vraja, because there's so much corruption and mafia, and a lot of the sacred hills they just want to destroy and sell because of the construction industry, sell these stones and make gravel and things like there. last year, or two, 3 years ago, you know, no matter what they were doing, the mafia was paying off people and was continuing to ravage Brudge. And he went to one of the places and began a fast till death. And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sadhus began to congregate, including Ayendra Prabhu came to do kirtan, probably, and Dakshinamurti Swami came. And then at one point, different people were giving speeches, and Dakshinamurti Swami asked one of his disciples to speak, who assists him. If Amiya is on the phone, that's Banu Nandini. She stayed with you. I don't know if you're listening right now. But she's from a Muslim family. I met her family, very beautiful people. And she's very together, very sweet person. And she got up and she spoke and she described how she grew up in Sarajevo or in Bosnia, and her, you know, her country was invaded and she had to sneak out in the middle of the night, something like that, in her car, father's car and the trunk, and so many, you know, relatives were killed. And she gave a very emotional plea, and she said, you know, she lost her home. And she accepted Brudge as her home. And then in a very emotional way, and they say, and now, again, my home is being destroyed. A Muslim background, speaking in that way, it was so moving that Ramesh Baba, who had taken a vow of silence, you know, said, I will now break my vow. And then he took the mic and spoke. And somehow or other they won the day. Anyway, the people there are just so sweet. And my understanding is the kirtan retreat and japa retreat, which Sachinandana Swami, Giriraj Swami, and Burijan Prabhu, on that day they'll go to Krishna Kund and do 12-hour kirtan. So for my own purification, I'd like to join right after that class. But I'm very excited to continue the regular teachings of the Narada Bhakti Sutras. And as you remember, we began to define bhakti. And it was this deep, deep sense. I would put it as for Krishna. Krishna is everything, and everything is for Krishna. And a devotee not only sees that, but he feels that. That's what a devotee is. It's natural. It's natural to love what you have a part of and what you have a relationship with. Loves it. You love everything in relationship to Krishna. And you try to serve. And there's a great sense of abject, total distress when you don't do that. Either by forgetfulness or by separation. So Narada kind of honed in on that kind of definition of bhakti. And as we advance, that's what our consciousness will be. We'll see Krishna everywhere. We'll see everything as Krishna. And we'll want to serve Krishna with all our heart. And that's the absolute reality. There will be an energy that comes to us, which is Krishna's own bliss potency, love, bhakti, to give Krishna pleasure. And it will be flowing through our hearts. And we'll feel satisfied because we'll know that's who we actually are. We are servants of Krishna. And we were meant to love Krishna. And I do love Krishna. It's awakened in my heart my natural sense of love and the natural sense of the ultimate reality, which is love, not sentimental, but existential. It's love. It's devotion. That's what flows in the ultimate reality. Why? That's just the way it is. That's the way Krishna made it. And it makes sense because that's how we see here in the world. Our ideals are to have our hearts filled with devotion and love. So he gave the example, the exemplars of the gopis. And let us understand, because whenever you speak and you're a teacher, you have to be very, I make this point again and again, and I can't stress it enough. You have to be cognizant of the frame of reference of your audience and how they understand what you're speaking. And you have to take all pains to make sure they have the proper frame of reference to understand the truth that you have spoken in truth. So he just wanted to explain that the gopis' love is not ordinary. It's not a selfish love, which is based on ego, but it is love for God. And in fact, there is some cognizance of that in the spontaneous love of the gopis, although it does not change their mood to reverence, awe, fear. They still see Krishna in terms of their eternal relationship with Krishna, their part in the divine play, never becomes covered. This is God. I'd better not be close. But rather, my lover is God. Let me get closer to him because my lover is so great. My friend is God. Let me become friends with him. Let me become even closer to him. Samam Bhagavati. I'm equal with God. God is my friend, I'm equal with God. Because we're friends. And friends is among equals. And then, as I explained, it wasn't ordinary love, mundane love, but it was in the purest sense of the love and happiness of my beloved is what my pleasure is. I'm not in this for anything for myself. Ashri Shiva Parvatam Panastamam Adarshanam Mamhatam Karotuva. You may crush me by your embrace. You may make me brokenhearted by not appearing before me. But still, you are my unconditional Lord. Birth after birth. So it's pure love. And now, after clearing that definition of bhakti up, now what Narada is going to do is describe bhakti in relationship to other paths and the superiority of it. And it's going to explain that bhakti is self-realization. Bhakti is our ultimate position, our ultimate role. And therefore, ultimately, bhakti is the fruit of all endeavors. Where other paths may help us to see and understand that goal, but bhakti is the goal itself. other paths, jhana. We may analyze things and understand we're not the body. That's going to help us to understand God in a way, or it can, because we get free from the basic misconception that prevents us from understanding transcendence, and that is the Atmavad, the philosophy that I am the body. And I am the body means I am the controller, not God. I am the center, not God. Whether you have a theoretical or realized understanding of that, that's the basic conception. And karma here refers to not just any work, but good work, purifying work, outlined in the Vedas. Work that's meant to purify you of the grossest type of self-centeredness and selfishness by making sacrifice. Yajna shishta shananta muchanto. Everything is based on nayam lokasya yajnasya kutaya kutasya. There is no happiness in this life or the next. So that principle of sacrifice is introduced in karma. Because even though there is fruitive intention, you have maybe some material goal, you have to sacrifice. You have to play by rules. You have to be in the association of priests. You have to have a conception of eternality, because a lot of times the goal is not even in this life, but the next. So there's things that are purifying, but still, it's fruitive. And it's material. And therefore, it still leads to reactions, because reactions are God's laws to alarm us to a constitutional consciousness of selfishness. That's not who we are. We are made of God. We are made for service. And anything else is external to the soul. The core being of who we are. Like just as much as the hand is part of the body, made of the body, made for the body. We are made of God. We are made for God. And anything else is not pure duty, and is touching the realms, is not embracing the realms of illusion. So karma is not the goal. And not only is not the goal, but it's mixed with material consciousness, even though it's purifying one. Or it can be purified. And then Gyan, in one sense, it's also not the goal. To detach ourselves from the world is not the goal. The goal is to situate ourselves in a place different from the world, which is our constitution. Muktir hitva yata rupam surupena mukti is yata rupam, discarding, transcending the yata rupam, the form that's external to the self, swarupena, and taking the form that's inherent to the self, vivasita, and situating oneself in that. So Gyan, renunciation, which is based on vairagya, is dealing with all kinds of conceptions that are external to the self. Renunciation is not the nature of the self. Like the hand, the nature of the hand is dedication to the body. It's not renunciation. It's external to the self also. And according to the Bhagavatam, yen ye ravindakshava muktamaniyas payasta bhavana vishuddha buddhaya aruya katrena param padant adhvata nadhvata yusmad angriya vimuktimaniyas. It's not, vimukti means it's liberation, but maniyas, it's in the mind. You haven't hit the core. And yoga also is not the ultimate goal. Yoga is meant to ultimately detach you from the body. And even in the Yoga Sutras, it doesn't really say much what liberation is. It just says what it's not. It's not the body. It's not the mind. It's not the false ego. It's not the material elements. But these processes are not condemned within itself. They're not condemned within itself because yet karoshi et asnasi, if you have attachments, whatever you do, give to God. Then it will help you. And same thing with gyan. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavamam papajyate vasudevasava samhava. One who is the best soul, Bahunam Jandanam Ante, at the end of many, 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 many lives, Jnanavam Mam Papajite, the Jnana, the Jnani, will surrender to Krishna. Vasudeva, and he'll understand that that ultimate reality is Vasudeva, it's Krishna. Vasudeva, Vasudeva Savamiti. The son of Vasudev. Vasudev. And of course, yoga, yoginam api sarvesham madhyatena tiratma. So, he's beginning. We're going to discuss three verses today. 25, 26, and 27. So 25 says, on the other hand, it's far superior. Adhikar tara, tara. It's the topmost qualification compared to these other things. The topmost. One second here. Okay, here we go. So all these paths, they have the same goal. The bhakti keeps the goal from the beginning. Whether you're qualified or not, you start with the goal. I am a soul. I am part of Krishna. I'm part of God, and I'm meant to surrender to God. So bhakti starts with the goal. It may be impure, but it starts with the goal. And because bhakti is the fruit of the endeavor, then it's happiness in itself. All other paths are for something else besides itself. Karma is for heavenly planets, Jnana is for impersonal realization. Yoga is for realization in that way. So it's not, anyway, it's not the goal. And therefore, it's the goal is the happiness, not the activity, unless the activity and the goal are non-different. And that's bhakti. Bhakti is the goal. You just practice the goal. And therefore, bhakti is happiness in itself. Susukam kartam adhyam. In the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it says it's... And therefore, the other processes are also not eternal because they're to achieve something else. So bhakti is more than a process. It's the goal. It's the ultimate reality. And it's pleasurable. Because love is pleasurable. And you don't love for something else. If you love for something else, then it is not love by definition. Because love is causeless. Love has no motive. If I love you because I get sex life, then it's not love. Nor do you believe that the love is the highest thing. You believe some material pleasure is the highest thing. If I love you because you'll give me money, then it's not love. I love you because I love you. Asnishiva padaratam panastumam adarshana. It does not matter what you do. I'm not in this for myself. I am in this for you. And therefore, in true love, people make sacrifice. No matter how they're dealt with, no matter how they're... If it is true love, if it's really a spirit of love, the Prabhupada gives the example of the mother for the child. The mother will sacrifice her own life. But she loves the child. It's not about her. It's about the child. So this is the nature of love. It's the constitutional goal. And it's superior because God dislikes the proud and is pleased with the humble. True bhakti is accepting a humble position in relationship to God. It's taking shelter of God. It is surrendering to God. It is being dependent on God. The nature of love itself is surrender. I gave a lecture in Queens, one yoga studio called Living Yoga. And it was different from preaching in Manhattan or giving classes in Manhattan because I even made a joke when I saw all the people sitting before me and there were black, Spanish, Latin American, Middle Eastern, African, that means people actually come, one lady came from Africa. And there was even a New York City fireman. There was such a variety of people, and I looked at the people, I said, you know, I'm very happy to be here with you. I'm from New York. and I'm really happy to be with my people. You know, something like that. And people know me, even though it's a little bit, what's it called? It's a little bit of illusion. But I said it from the heart. But then I looked around and I said, wait a second, there's probably not one person in this room that's born in America, but that's what New York is. So then I said to him, then I looked around, I said, actually speaking, I don't consider you immigrants. I said, the immigrants, and I was joking about the people that study yoga in New York, I said, the immigrants are those people that come from the Midwest. That's who comes from the, in the New York, and they become, try to be actresses or actors, and they become waiters. But when I was speaking in that lecture, one imam was there. That's a Muslim priest. He was the father of the lady who runs the yoga studio. And he came to me after the lecture. He's a very humble man. He said, I loved your lecture because people in the world today, he said, they don't understand that love entails surrender. Because what does love, true love, really mean? That the needs of that person and the desires that represent those needs rule you. You take the subservient position, even if you're the authority and you love someone, your mood is to serve them. And that's the opposite of pride, where the most prominent thing becomes one's own self-aggrandizement and one's own promotion. And the sense of entitlement that that's who I am and that's where I belong, in the superior position. And therefore, others should move by my needs and my desires. Because I am great. I deserve it. We're reading in my class. This is really me. When I'm in gear in Vrindavan, that's when I feel the most me. And it's a simple program. I wake up in my room. I'm hearing the bells of the temples. I get up before that, I sit on my bed. I'm chanting. And then after a while, I'll do my deity worship, and then I'll walk to the temple and pay respects to Prabhupada, take darshan, and then come back and either take people out or do my writing. Take lunch about 12:30, 1 o'clock, simple. And give class on the Bhagavad Gita from 4 to 5:30. And then go to the temple and sit in Iyengar's kirtan. And it's still Iyengar's kirtan. And I'm still amazed by how many people are in that parampara. Last few nights, we had beautiful kirtan. Sit in the kirtan. But giving class on Brahma Vibhohan Lila described that Krishna is in the center. and all the coward boys just circle him in line and looking at him with great pleasure. Because they're in the position where love can flow from their heart. Not if you artificially assume I'm the center. Love doesn't flow from the heart. So love, bhakti, is the periphery. It's moving out of the center. And pride is abhorring the periphery and maneuvering yourself to establish yourself as the center. Let me be president of the United States. Why? Because I want to serve the people? No. Because I want to be in the center. And if we look at most of what goes on in our minds, the fluctuations, the thoughts, the anxieties, the fears, the desires, most of what goes on is coming from the platform of false ego, completely divorced from love. It's the thoughts that come from one who wants to assume the false position, I am in the center. And therefore, it's filled with duality, it's filled with fear, because it's an artificial position. And bhakti is saturating the consciousness with the impressions of God-centered life and the happiness of putting oneself in that position. That is called bhakti. And God likes that and is repulsed by the pride. And to the extent that karma and jnana and yoga have a sense of personal desire, personal sense of myself for me, yoga for me, jnana for me, karma for me, bhakti for Krishna. And it's also, if it's for me, then there's hate involved. As soon as there's desire, there's hate. It's for me, and that's the competitor. And therefore, bhakti is a very hard process for the conditioned souls to take, because it's paramo namatsaranam satam. It's namatsaranam satam. It's for devotees, and devotees are near matsara. They don't have hate. And hate here is defined not just, you know, some type of revenge, but any type of competitive or fruitive spirit. And other paths very much deal with my own power, my own effort, and therefore they foster pride, where bhakti advances by dependence and humility. And if our practice is not infused with that, no matter how much we chant and endeavor, we won't be successful. And the example is Narada Muni. He worked hard, he got sakshat darshan, direct vision of Krishna. And he tried it again, but with the sense of personal accomplishment. It did not work. You won't get Krishna. You get Krishna when your practices are done with utter dependence and humility. Utter realization that I may have this, I may have that, I may have this, but it is not mine, it's Krishna's, and it's given to me. I am the bank teller who is counting the money. I am not a millionaire. So, therefore, Krishna says, Narada says that Sattu, this devotion, karma, jnana, yogi bhya api adhikaratara, therefore pure devotional service is adhikaratara, it has more eligibility, more qualification, it is therefore far superior to these other paths. Why? Phala rupatat, because its form is the goal. It is the goal. Of course it's superior. It's the nature of the living being. The perfectional state of the living entity is called the devotee. Prabhupada says that. And then, furthermore, Ishwarasyapi Abhimani. Abhimani. Ishra, Abhimani, of those who are proud. Dveshatvat, the Lord. Dveshatvat, the Lord doesn't like one who is proud. Dainya, Priyatvat. Of Dainya, the Lord is fond. Of those who are humble, the Lord is fond. And we are also. We are fond of those who are for others, who have devotion, who don't put themselves in the center, who don't have a sense of entitlement, who don't try to control. We are fond because that's the heart is pure. And we inherently understand that that's their nature. Their inherent nature is coming out. And those who have a sense of entitlement, who try to control, who are proud, it's not pleasing to us. And we know that's external to their real nature. So here, now we have to explain the definition of bhakti, explains how bhakti is superior to karma, jnana, and yoga. Okay, any questions?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Gail, hi, Krishna.
I don't know what we have time for, but I did have a couple. One is, I know that we don't like to see pride in people, which is probably partly due to our wanting to be the superior one in all circumstances, too. But
yeah.
I'm not sure if I've gotten it totally, why Krishna hates it so much and why he loves humility so much. And when you answer, can you relate it to, I was just reading in Nectar of Devotion about how indebted Krishna felt to Draupadi when she finally just called his name and stopped trying to help herself, you know, just totally dependent on him. Why was that dependence that she exhibited when she simply called his name, why did that inspire such a feeling of indebtedness to him when she was the one who was crying out for service, you know? He felt so served himself, but she was the one looking for, you know, something. So, I don't know. I mean, that's when you were talking about dependence,
because,
immediately thought of
when you have dependence, it's a form of trust and love. And it it brings out one's relationship of love. Of course, this is dealing with God as a superior. It's that type of respect and dependence is part of that natural relationship. And it's a form of love. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it inspires a reciprocation. If you can just look in the world of someone who's very, very humble, and they depend on you for protection, for care, for shelter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a form of love, like a child
mm-hmm.
with the mother. You know, it's the child loves the mother because what you see, the love of the superior, the love that the superior has is, the inferior has, the junior has, is you are my protector. You are my maintainer. That's their love.
Yeah.
That's their
how
love.
I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm glad that.
I just needed confirmation. Yeah.
Okay, great. Great. Okay. Anything else, Gail?
Just a little bit. You're talking about the fact that our love for Krishna is existential, it's not sentimental. I mean, I think I get the fact that it's existential because, you know, that's our nature. You know, it's our nature is to love Krishna. So if you could just clarify for me, you know, when would it have been sentimental only as opposed to existential? I'm not sure what you know, because, you know, it involves sentiment. Love involves sentiment. You know, it's not only sentiment because you act on it, but...
Right. Yeah. Yeah, of course there's sentiment. But it's real. There actually is a relationship. There actually is a connection. There actually is a inherent reciprocation. So it's based on something substantial. The object of your love is real, right? You can have an object of your love that's not real. You know, you mm-hmm. could love something mm-hmm. temporary, you know. And even the even the love for others, ultimately, the reality of that love is because they're Krishna. They're part of Krishna. And you're part of Krishna. And Krishna, you know, even loving ourselves is loving Krishna. Because we're part of Krishna. That's our glories. We're part of that ultimate reality. It's a very amazing thing. That it's not just duality, I'm here, Krishna's there. We are part of that ultimate, we're just not the whole thing, but it's wonderful to be a part of God. How wonderful. It's just like the body, and you know, you have different hands. The love of hand for hand can't be separate from the love of the body. Otherwise, it's artificial. Because, you know, the hands are part of the body, and they have to recognize that. So let's say a hand loves a hand. You can't do it separate from the body. They have to, you know, stick the knife, the fork in with one hand and the knife in the other hand. Whatever, you know, there's a cooperative spirit there. And therefore, there's something inherent or real in it. Okay, Gail, thank you.
Thank you, Alpha.
Wow, hey, great. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Rajarajan.
Hare Krishna. It's really wonderful that you're always listening to my classes with your husband, Gopran Bhakta. One day you'll maybe wind up in Braj when I'm here. We'll see. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Kumar.
Thank you, Kumar, from Dallas.
Yes, Maharaj.
I'm thinking I should get over there next year and visit also some people in Phoenix. But let's see. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hey, Maharaj.
Who's that?
It's Kim.
Hey, Kim. Hare Krishna.
Hi.
Great.
Hare Krishna. I'm actually holidays in Paramananda right now.
Oh, really? Just
yeah.
Saying Baladev's name makes me hungry.
And I did. I just
ate. Oh, great. 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 That's okay. My regards to everyone there.
It will.
It's nice, the community, and I believe Gloria has plans of coming up there, too. Okay.
Yeah, her husband's here right now, actually.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, great.
Okay, I just wanted to say hi. Hare Krishna.
It's nice to hear everybody there from Jersey, Brajarade and Govram Bhakta, upstate Dallas. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. Thank you all very much. Panchakopa to the Dishaka, to the new baby.